from Sapporo, Japan. Davito.org for Saturday, January 1st, 2011. Welcome to the new decade, everybody. I'd like to do two articles today, both from the Japan Times. One is my Just Because column of Tuesday, June 2nd, 2009, and it is entitled The Issue That Dares Not Speak Its Name. A few columns ago, as in Toadies, Vultures, and Zombie Debates, which was in March 3rd, 2009, I discussed how foreign apologists resuscitate dead-end discussions on racial discrimination. Promoting cultural relativity for their own ends, they peddle bigoted and obsolescent ideologies now impossible to justify in their societies of birth. This would be impossible in Japan, too, if racial discrimination was illegal, and it would be nice if people who most need a law passed would unite and demand one. But that's not why getting that law is tough. It's more because the domestic debate on racial discrimination has been dulled and avoided due to rhetorical tricks of the Japanese media and government. After all, if you can't discuss a problem properly, you can't fix it. Here's how it works. In Japanese, racial discrimination is jinshu sabetsu. That is the established term used in official translations of international treaties that Japan has signed up to, such as the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, or CERD. However, the Japanese media won't couch the discussion in those terms. This was visible during the nationwide debate generated by the Otada Onsen case of 1999 to 2005, where public bathhouses refused entry to customers because they didn't quote-unquote look Japanese. If you read the oodles of non-tabloid articles on this case, which are archived at davito.org/nihongotimeline.html, no spaces, you'll see the debate was conducted in milder, misleading language. For example, it was rendered in the media in terms of gaikokujin sabetsu, or discrimination against foreigners. But that's not the same thing. The people being discriminated against were not all foreign, such as me. Or else it was depicted as gaiken sabetsu, discrimination by physical appearance. But that's not race, either, nor is physical appearance specifically covered by the CERD. This term particularly derails the debate. It actually generates sympathy for people afraid of how others look. Think about it. If, say, some old fart is standoffish towards people who are tall or big, dark, scary-looking, foreign-looking, etc. Oh well, shikata ga nai. It can't be helped. We Japanese are shy, remember? Fortunately, there are limits. Yeah, discrimination by looks? Sure. But few Japanese would ever admit to disliking people specifically by race, even though one is a factor of the other. That's because racial discrimination, according to the Japanese education system, happens in other countries, like America, under segregation, or South Africa under apartheid, but not in Japan. Then, things get really wet. Remember, we Japanese admire certain types of foreigners, so we're obviously not prejudiced, and we Japanese have been discriminated against in the past for our race, like, for example, those American World War II internment camps. And how about the time we got ripped off for being naive, trusting Japanese the last time we ventured overseas? You know, it works both ways, you see. Welcome to the never-never land of self-justification and victimization. If we Japanese are doing something discriminatory, so what? Everybody else is doing it, so we'll keep on keeping on, thank you very much. There the debate dies a death of 1,000 relativities. Back to the media, which stifles more intelligent debate through its rhetorics of avoidance. They rattle on about minshu teki sabetsu, or discrimination by ethnicity, even though it wasn't until last year that Japan even admitted that it had any minorities. Or else, It's not portrayed as a form of discrimination at all. It's a matter of cultural misunderstandings, language barriers, microwaves and sunspots, but whatever. Anything but calling a spade a spade. That's why only one article out of the 100 or so on the Otaru Onsen's case actually deemed it flat out, without quoting some radical-sounding activist, Jinshu Sabetsu. That's not a misprint, only one. And that was a Hokkaido Shimbun editorial at the very end of the case. It's a pity that it only took 5 years of debate for them to get it, and more a pity that the media has mostly gone back since to claiming discrimination by nationality, looks, ethnicity, cultural, etc. all over again. The Japanese government's fingerprints are all over this rhetorical legerdemain. When the United Nations CERD Committee first accused Japan of not doing enough to eliminate racial discrimination back in 2000, double talk was in fine form. First, the Japanese government argued back that Japan has no ethnic minorities, and therefore anyone who was a citizen was a member of the Japanese race. Thus, citizens were not covered by the CERD because any discrimination against them couldn't be by race. Then, they admitted that foreigners in Japan might indeed be victims of discrimination. Well, that's too bad. They're foreigners. They don't have the same rights as citizens, such as the right to vote or run for office. Even the CERD acknowledges that. Well, if foreigners want the same rights, well, they should naturalize. Well, never mind those 500,000 or so former foreigners who have naturalized, such as this writer, who don't fall into this neat dichotomy. Somehow, we don't count. Essentially, the government is arguing that the CERD covers nobody in Japan. That's why the domestic debate on racial discrimination is so carefully worded. If somebody gets denied something ostensibly because they're a foreigner or foreign-looking, it's not a matter of race. It might be discrimination by nationality or by face or by culture or not even discrimination at all. Just don't you dare call it Jinshu Sabetsu, the scourge that dares not speak its name. If we pretend it doesn't exist, we can't legislate against it. And now, how about that second article? This is from the Japan Times of Tuesday, July 7th, 2009. This is the Just Because column, and it is entitled, Cops Crack Down with IP Checks. This is a full-page article. Let's have a look. My blog has been getting periodic pings about rumblings in Roppongi. Tokyo cops cleaning out pesky foreign touts before Olympic inspectors see them. And the U.S. Embassy warning Americans to stay away from the area after reports of drug drinks and thefts. The latter was particularly embarrassing, I mean, coming from the Americans of all people, given Japan's reputation for having the world's safest streets. So police had been reasserting their control, cracking down on, you guessed it, foreigners. And where might you find them? You guessed that too. I heard about police raids in Roppongi in May and June, but now they are going beyond ID checks for visa overstayers. Regular customers have been apprehended for drinking while foreign, bundled into police vans and shuttled off to headquarters for urine tests for drugs. According to their associates, those testing positive for controlled substances have been deported. Now, what triggered this drugs dragnet? A few months ago, several sumo wrestlers, in Japanese and otherwise, were discovered possessing and puffing marijuana. Then it turned up in Japanese universities and Japanese rugby teams, and suddenly reefer madness was taking its toll on Japan's youth. Some reeferers referred the cops to foreign dealers in, where else, Roppongi. This justified a budget for new trooper toys. An alert Debito.org reader sent in an article reporting that the National Police Agency bought 78 spectrometers in May from Thermo Fisher Scientific Incorporated, designed for quick drug analysis. Now back to the Roppongi smokeout. Witnesses told Debito.org they saw foreigners being rounded up at bar exits for a piss take. However, Few people who looked Japanese were being detained, they said. Of course, if cops were looking for the dealers, as opposed to the users who corrupted our youth, I'm not sure how a tinkle test would uncover them. But never mind, the police have to do something, or at least be seen to be doing something. But watch the policy creep beyond suspected dope dens. Another blog reader, motorbiking at sunrise to a Roppongi dojo in April, said that patrolling cops ignored him parking until he took off his helmet. Then they made a beeline and demanded to search his luggage compartment. My source said that one cop commented after finding out that he was Canadian, quote, "I hear that marijuana is pretty popular in Canada," implying that he was possibly carrying the demon weed. Finally, they had him reach for the sky while they searched his pockets. Yet another reader reported that he was approached last March in Roppongi Hills by a young trainee cop who demanded his bag for inspection, explicitly accusing him of carrying drugs and knives, moreover talking down to him like he was, quote, a child or a mental incompetent. The cub cop kept snarling until his handler intervened. Seeing their prey was a Hanshin Tigers fan, they let him go. Hooray, go Tigers! But the metastasis of the surveillance society is only just beginning. Reports from Tokyo, Shibuya, Yoyogi, and Akihabara indicate that even Japanese are being targeted for these surly satchel searches. Meanwhile, the Japan Times reported on June 26th that spy cameras staffed by neighborhood associations, not trained professionals, are being installed in 15 other residential areas nationwide. So don't expect this to be a temporary anti-crime campaign. Again, as I've argued before, see the Zeitgeist July 8, 2008, this is a case of Gaijin as guinea pig. Laws bent to target foreigners will ultimately be stretched to target everyone else. And here's what's bent. By laws, cops need a warrant to do a bag inspection. Not to mention take a urine sample. So last Wednesday, I telephoned the Azabu police station to find out how this circle was being squared. I was connected to a Mr. Tishima, who was in no mood for questions. After identifying myself by name and affiliation, that of human rights group Franca, he repeatedly refused to give me straight answers. I did get Mr. Tishima to confirm that the police were subjecting foreigners to urine tests, but, he averred, not only foreigners. When I asked him to explain the criteria for deciding whom to stop and detain, well, he refused to elaborate. When I asked if a warrant for a pee check was necessary, he'd said it depended on the situation. Well, what kind of situation? Not gonna say. But if the individual agrees to submit to this wee procedure, quote, we no longer need a warrant. What happens if they don't submit? Not gonna say. When I asked if non-cooperation could lead to arrest, he said he was now too busy to answer any more questions. When I asked him what his position was in the police department, he enforced his right to remain silent and hung up on me. In a separate inquiry, the Japan Times wrung these clarifications out of the Tokyo Metropolitan Police Public Relations Center. 1. Police raids on businesses only happen after a reliable tip. 2. Urine testing is not a new procedure and has always been done whenever necessary. 3. Only those who look wasted on drugs will be asked for a urine sample. 4. Urine samples are only ever taken after persuasion, never under threat. Yeah, sure, but something still stinks. Much ink has been expended exploring how the Japanese police lack accountability. They can detain you for quote-unquote voluntary questioning with or without probable cause for days at a time, and then convert that into arrest for up to 23 days, carry out unrecorded grillings that famously crack detainees into making false confessions, interpret the constitutionally guaranteed right to remain silent as a sign of guilt, and otherwise make your life miserable in detention if you just don't quote-unquote cooperate. The police, however, as Mr. Tishima so amply demonstrated, often see themselves as under no compulsion to cooperate, even when you need information to make your rights and their legal obligations clear. Well, if this were a contractual relationship and an agent took advantage of your ignorance to lock you into a punitive agreement, it would be considered fraud. But the police hold themselves to a different standard. Never mind informed consent, your ignorance becomes leverage for them to detain, arrest, and imprison you. Thus, without checks and balances, things stretch to their logical extremes. Random street stoppages have crept beyond simple ID checks and into IP checks. These are clearly more invasive, more intrusive, and more easily mixed up. I mean, urine samples require scientific precision. They can be spilled or misplaced. It's not as if they have photo ID. They are, in any case, beyond the current bounds of the law regarding search and seizure without a warrant. Well, don't get me wrong. I believe that drugs are a bad thing and that people must obey narcotics laws. But there are also issues of law enforcement here that must be obeyed. These checks take on added importance since it seems that these random pee searches, done without accountability or appeal to counteract false positives, and what I mean by false positives are from poppy seeds, nasal sprays, medicines for colds, migraines and allergies, and even tonic water. They may in fact not be all that random after all, and one mistake and your life in Japan as you know it is over. So let me enlighten. This is the law. Police cannot search your person, property, or possessions without a warrant. Ask for one, and how you do that is you use this Japanese. Reijo ga arimasu ka? Reijo is the word for warrant. Reijo ga arimasu ka? And if they threaten to take you to a police box for questioning, refuse, and don't move. Police cannot force you to go anywhere without a formal arrest, and the word for that is taiho. And you want to say, taiho saretemasu ka? Taiho desu ka? But be careful, do not raise your voice, and never, ever touch the cop, or they could arrest you for, quote-unquote, obstruction of duty. This is why sometimes you see street standoffs between cops and questionees, during which nobody moves or talks until somebody gets tired and goes home. Know your rights by checking out debito.org/whattodoif.html, no spaces, or read more in our book, Handbook for Newcomers, Migrants, and Immigrants. But don't assume the police will give the public the same cooperation they demand from the public. After all, accountability gets in the way of their modus operandi. Laws protecting people against invasive procedures interfere with keeping the streets safe from foreigners. Anyway, shouldn't Roppongi also be protesting this? Inconveniencing customers to this extent without probable cause is bad for business, is it not? But it's also bad for society in general. What happens to a small minority sets precedents for the rest of the population. Ignore this at your peril. All right, that'll do it for this month's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And to increase your enjoyment, here's an excerpt from another Duran Duran song. They just came out with a new album last month. And here's an excerpt from their most recent single. It's the title track from the album, and it is entitled, All You Need Is Now. Welcome to a new decade. We'll talk to you in the new year. Thank you very much for listening. This is Arudo Debito for the Debito.org podcast in Sapporo, Japan. Thanks for listening.